For what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The president to defend the Iran nuclear deal in a major address Wednesday. President Obama is set to deliver a major speech in Washington urging congressional approval of the international nuclear agreement reached with Iran to limit its nuclear program in exchange for a lifting of sanctions. The president will urge lawmakers in the midst of a 60-day review period to avoid squandering a historic opportunity to cut off Iran's path to an atomic bomb. Meanwhile, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who opposes the agreement, lobbied American Jewish groups Tuesday.
The nuclear deal with Iran doesn't block Iran's path to the bomb. It actually paves Iran's path to the bomb. Worse, it gives Iran two paths to the bomb. Iran can get to the bomb by keeping the deal, or Iran could get to the bomb by violating the deal.
President Obama also held private meetings with Jewish leaders at the White House. A spokesman says he told them he believes the deal is in the national security interests of both the U.S. and Israel. Suspected Boko Haram militants killed at least eight people and kidnapped dozens of others early Tuesday from a Cameroonian village along the Nigerian border. Meanwhile, visiting U.S. Congressman Daryl Issa said Tuesday in Abuja, the U.S. is prepared to assist the Nigerian military once it puts its human rights concerns to rest.
But in the meantime, there is a greater level of military training that is needed that we will provide. There are forces from all of your neighbors that are coming together to assist. And we will continue to provide some of the most high-level surveillance and tactical assistance flown by U.S. to support the hunting down of Boko Haram.
Mr. Issa met with the new Nigerian president, Muhammadu Buhari. In June, Amnesty International accused the Nigerian military of systemic human rights abuses. This is VOA News. Forces backing exiled Yemeni President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi recaptured an important military base from Houthi rebels Tuesday as they continued to campaign to reverse the Houthi campaign that forced Mr. Hadi to flee in March. Backed by airstrikes from a Saudi-led coalition, they seized the Al-Anad air base located about 60 kilometers from the port city Aden. Amnesty International Tuesday said it has confirmed that Sudanese forces committed war crimes against civilians in the South Kordofan region, including bombing and shelling. The rights group sent a team of researchers to rebel-occupied areas, concluding at least 35 civilians were killed in months earlier this year. Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir, under International Criminal Court indictment for war crimes, is planning to travel to New York in September to speak to the UN. U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner was asked if the visa request for the Sudanese leader has been made.
We don't talk about individual visa requests from the podium or even publicly in any way, shape, or form. You know, we've been very clear how we feel about the president of Sudan and that he's wanted for crimes, and we want to see him held accountable for those crimes. We have not that I'm aware of, received any, or just rather we're aware of the reports, but we haven't seen anything beyond that.
Mr. Bashir had to leave South Africa earlier than planned early this year after a court ruled there he should have been banned from leaving before a hearing on the ICC indictments. The medical condition of Burundian rights activist Pierre Claver Mbonimpa appears to have improved after being shot Monday by gunmen on a motorcycle near his home. The attack followed by a day the assassination in the capital of President Pierre Nkurunziza's security aide and General Adolphe Ndshimirana, raising concerns over revenge killings. Tanzania's four main opposition parties Tuesday named former Prime Minister Edward Lowassa as their joint presidential candidate for October's election. The 61-year-old Lowassa served as Prime Minister from 2005 to 2008 until he resigned over corruption allegations, which he denies. New York City's largest recorded outbreak of Legionnaires' disease has killed seven people and infected nearly 90 others. Bill de Blasio is the city's mayor.
At this moment, we're confident, based on the medical and scientific evidence that we have identified the only sites that are causing this outbreak, and again, they have all been cleaned.
The disease is caused when water contaminated with the Legionella bacteria is inhaled into the lungs. The bacteria was discovered last week at a hotel and in equipment at a hospital. Thousands of firefighters are battling to contain 21 wildfires in California that have forced thousands to flee their homes and burn large swaths of land. The largest Rocky Fire grew to 263 square kilometers early Tuesday after bursting through containment lines north of San Francisco. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm William Eagle in Washington, filling in for James Buddy, who is on vacation. Today is Wednesday, August 5th. And here are some of the stories we're covering. A top UN official says a vaccine could help contain Ebola, but people still have to temper their expectations.
The game is still about case finding, contact tracing, rapid isolation, safe burials. That's how you stop Ebola, certainly in the current period.
That's WHO Assistant Director General Bruce Aylward on the continuing fight against Ebola. Also, President Barack Obama and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon talk about climate change, the Middle East, and instability in East Africa.
The leaders also tackled the situation in South Sudan, with President Obama noting that hope surrounding South Sudan's recognition as a country has been squandered by its president and opposition leader.
VOA's Aru Pandey covers the meeting between President Obama and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. And a look at threats to wildlife in Zimbabwe and Cameroon. Those stories, plus Markuma Sports and our Listener of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A senior official of the World Health Organization says halting the Ebola epidemic in West Africa by the end of the year is a realistic and appropriate goal. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
In the past 4 weeks, the World Health Organization reports cases of Ebola have dropped from 35 a week to 2 this week, one each in Sierra Leone and Guinea. But it cautions these numbers are likely to increase as flare-ups of the disease are not uncommon. The UN agency says the response to the epidemic has gotten much better. During the past few months, it says health workers have got a better grip on how to deal with chains of transmission. WHO Assistant Director General Bruce Aylward explains health workers have become much better in identifying people who are infected with the Ebola virus and in tracing all those who have come in contact with the patient. He says the number of cases of Ebola has gone down because fewer people who potentially could spread the disease are being missed. But he cautions against complacency, noting substantial risks from Ebola remain.
The biggest risk now is irrational exuberance, to quote a famous economist, or unrealistic expectations. There are people thinking, oh, great, it's gone from 30 to 25 to 7 to 2. It will go to 0, to 1 and 0. It won't. What will happen is in some of the areas where we still have a transmission chain, we may have an unsafe burial again. We may have another missing contact who goes and infects a new area, and we will get a flare.
Dr. Aylward is enthusiastic about the development of what appears to be a safe and effective vaccine against Ebola. He tells VOA the vaccine can play an important role in controlling and containing Ebola, but he says people have to temper their expectations.
Sometimes people run away with the idea that it's a game changer. It's not a changer as much as it is an enhancer. The game is still about case finding, contact tracing, rapid isolation, safe burials. And that's how you stop Ebola, certainly in the current period. Now, what the vaccine may do may help to reduce the number of contacts or contacts of contacts who get exposed to it, help protect health workers potentially. So it should help make us safer.
Dr. Aylward notes Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia have reduced the case numbers and fatalities from Ebola to practically zero without the help of a vaccine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is commending President Barack Obama's commitment to fighting climate change. That issue, along with conflicts in the Middle East, dominated the leaders' talks in the Oval Office Tuesday. VOA correspondent Aru Pandey has more from the White House.
A day after announcing a landmark plan to cut carbon emissions from U.S. power plants, President Obama hosted the United Nations chief at the White House with climate change high on the agenda.
Encouraged the Secretary General to continue to work with us to press those countries who have not yet put forward bold, aggressive plans to do so, because we need Paris to be a success, and the world has to step up in a concerted way on behalf of our children and future generations.
UN Secretary General Ban praised Obama's, quote, important and visionary leadership on the issue from his first day in office, and noted the plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from U.S. coal-burning power plants sets an example for other nations.
Also, it can have generate huge dividends here at home in U.S. economy, and I'm sure that this will impact a lot of countries. And I really appreciate your personal engagement, starting with China and Brazil and India and many others.
However, Mr. Obama's plan faces intense domestic opposition from Republicans who are vowing to fight the tougher power plant standards, saying they'll hurt coal mining states. Aside from the threat of climate change, the two leaders also tackled the many conflicts in the Middle East, including the humanitarian crisis in Syria.
Stop the killing and arrive at a realistic political process that can lead to a stabilizing of the country.
In Libya, Mr. Obama noted some modest progress in bringing together the many factions that have created difficulty in governance and a security vacuum in the country. And on Yemen, Mr. Ban said both leaders reinforced the need for a political, not military, solution in that country. He said the humanitarian situation was getting worse by the day and called on member states to provide generous help to Yemenis.
80% of population, to be exact, more than 21 million people, are in need of urgent humanitarian assistance.
The leaders also tackled the situation in South Sudan, with President Obama noting that hope surrounding South Sudan's recognition as a country has been squandered by its president and opposition leader. He said if a deal to stop the bloodshed and form an inclusive government is not reached by August 17th, the world would have to, quote, move forward with a different plan. Arup Pandey, VOA News, The White House.
International headlines from Africa this week have been consumed with the death of Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe. He was killed by a Minnesota dentist and hunter, Walter James Palmer. The government is asking the United States to extradite Palmer for trial in Zimbabwe, but some Zimbabweans are calling for the government not to divert its attention from what they say are more pressing needs. Thomas Chirapasi of the VOA broadcast Studio 7 went into the streets of Harare and filed this report.
Many Zimbabweans have condemned last month's killing of Cecil the Lion by American tourist Walter James Palmer outside the Wange National Park, but they were quick to urge the Harare administration not to divert the people's minds from pressing bread and butter issues. One such person is Clopas Mutau, who says Cecil the Lion was a source of revenue for the country's tourism sector.
The Cecil Lion issue is major challenge to whoever comes in here as a tourist. In tourism sector, we've seen an area that it has been an image which has been tarnished.
Leader of the MDCT Youth Assembly, Happy Mochidziva, tells Studio 7 that Zimbabwean authorities should not waste time seeking Palmer's extradition, but should focus more on promoting human rights in the country, especially with activists like Itai Dzamara still being unaccounted for. Chidziva's sentiments were echoed by another Harare resident, Kudzai Munemo.
I don't think it's really necessary for us to boggle our minds over such a petty little issue of a lion that's died. On a daily basis, people are losing their jobs. What has the government done about it? Nothing. They are actually helping in firing more people.
Trevor Ngube, chairman of Alpha Media Holdings, publishers of the Newsday and independent newspapers, declined an interview with CNN, saying he could not discuss the issue of the dead lion ahead of key economic and political issues that required urgent attention. Environment Minister Opam Chinguri Kashiri announced last week that Harare was in the process of seeking Palmer's extradition from the United States, but investigations carried out by Studio 7 today indicated that the state's house is not in order, as authorities kept referring questions from one ministry to the other. Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana referred questions to the Home Affairs Ministry, saying his office had not yet received any communication regarding Palmer's extradition.
We actually have a royal no prayer after the formal request has been made from the investigation side.
Meanwhile, the Director General of the Department of Parks and Wildlife, Edson Chidzia, issued a statement announcing the immediate suspension of the hunting of lions, leopards, and elephants outside the Wange National Park. Chidzia also announced that boar hunting had been suspended with immediate effect and no such hunting will be conducted unless it has been confirmed and authorized in writing by the Director General of his department. From Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm William Eagle in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 5th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. In 2012, there was an international uproar when poachers penetrated the Buba Njita National Park in northern Cameroon. They killed over 200 elephants and carted away their tusks. The government responded by deploying soldiers to guard the wildlife reserve and halt the decimation of the elephants. However, 3 years later, statistics show the continuing slaughter of the remaining pachyderms. Alan Bernard Ononino is a wildlife law enforcement coordinator with the Worldwide Fund for Nature in Cameroon. VOA's Enrique Divine Jr. in Douala asked him for an update on the situation.
It's true that in an ideal world, we can aim for zero poaching, but it would be quite ambitious to think that one day there will be no poaching as far as elephant is concerned. What we are trying to do is to reduce the scope of the situation, because actually the situation is really alarming. You probably know about the situation of hundreds of elephants that have been killed in the north of Cameroon, but also in the forest area there are on a daily basis reports about killings of elephants.
Can we get some statistics for last year, probably for early 2015 too?
Well, as far as ivory seizures is concerned, we can talk of something like 250 ivory tusks that has been seized. So this represents something like 125 elephants killed. But the number is also very low compared to the real situation, because as you can imagine, some of these situations are not reported at all. Meaning that the ivory is not seized, the poachers are not arrested, they continue their sad activity freely. But according to the statistic of the seizure, is quite alarming already.
So what explains these decimation trends? What accounts for the fact that despite the fight you've been putting up, the trends still continue?
Well, the main driving factor is the high demand, especially the international demand, mostly from Southeast Asia, China, Thailand, and other Asian countries. And the effect here in the field is that there is a serious increase in the price of ivory.
Why?
This is the law of the market. The more there is a demand, the higher the price increase. So this is why more efforts have to be put in place in order to make sure that the demand is lower, and that could also lead to a decrease in the price of ivory. Because with this, with the actual status of the price of ivory, a lot of people now turn themselves into ivory trafficking.
That was Alan Bernard Ononino, a law enforcement coordinator with the Worldwide Fund for Nature in Cameroon. He was speaking with reporter Divine Enterike. South Africa's state utility, Eskom, is implementing an aggressive schedule of electricity load shedding to prevent the grid from collapsing. Meanwhile, the unreliable power supply is prompting consumers to become more self-sufficient, producing energy in their own homes from cleaner, renewable sources. Jillian Parker has more for VOA News from Johannesburg, where keeping the lights on has become a challenge.
Eskom, which provides South Africa with around 95% of its electricity, has said there is a high probability of almost daily controlled power cuts for the next few months to avert a total system collapse. Years of poor maintenance, non-cost reflective tariffs and underinvestment are partly to blame. Adding 7 million people to the grid since the beginning of democracy in 1994 and delays in new plant openings have also stretched its ageing fleet of 27 plants to the breaking point. Frustrated with epileptic power supply, South Africans are considering alternative power sources to reduce their dependence on the ailing grid. Renewables currently only meet about 2% of South Africa's 30,000 megawatt needs.
Over here you got pedal throttle and here you got panels on the back. The whole roof has got panels. Anyways, north face.
Engineer Greg Ball depends on Eskom generated power to supplement 5% of his family's energy needs. Vast solar panels that cover the roof of his Johannesburg home meet the rest of their demand with surplus electricity to power two electric cars.
You know, you think, well, what kind of world are your kids going to grow up in? You know, they're going to witness the end of oil. Weather patterns that are extreme, I mean, they're going to experience a lot. You have to start developing an environmental conscience. I don't want to be somebody that sort of goes through my whole career business doing just doing the same old, and then dumping all these issues and problems onto my kids. If we can make just a very small difference individually, collectively, it'll be significant.
Detractors contend that coming off the grid is a luxury for those who can afford it. To equip the Ball family home with solar technology cost over $30,000. Ball argues that he has recouped the expense, saving about $7,500 annually on fuel alone. Despite initial outlays, several solar companies in Johannesburg told VOA that recent power constraints have triggered a dramatic uptick in interest. Ryan Beach is part of a Go Green project for Parkhurst, an affluent Johannesburg suburb. The ambitious project aims to take all 2,000 houses off the grid and running on renewable energy by 2020.
It's going to be a complete going green from A to Z project. So we're currently investigating all the technology out there, from hydrogen to solar to wind, to doing feasibility studies and looking at all possibilities. And it's basically going to be, a game changer for the country that other neighbourhoods will also follow.
With local governments earning approximately 25 billion rand, or about $2 billion a year from water and marked up electricity, there is likely to be resistance to losing 2,000 customers who pay some of the highest rates in the country. But energy experts say South Africa must embrace cleaner energy and end its reliance on coal. As the fourth largest coal exporting country in the world, South Africa's coal generated power makes it one of the world's top carbon emitters. Energy expert Chris Yelland argues the government should be looking at sustainable and greener energy options.
No longer is coal a source of cheap energy for South Africa. It's also becoming a burden because of the CO2 emissions, or the carbon footprint of Eskom, which is huge. There's a lot of good reasons why we should diversify away from coal. And there's also a lot of good reasons, in my opinion, to diversify away from a single monopoly electricity supplier, especially one that is in financial trouble, that is operational trouble and environmental problems because of this dependence on coal.
Eskom's financial woes could mean higher tariff costs in the future, which could encourage more people to turn to renewable energy. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Bill. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with swimming. South African Cameron van der Berg
won his heat in a new men's world 50 meters breaststroke record of 26.62 seconds at the FINA World Championships in Kazan, Russia on Tuesday. His old world record stood at 26.67 seconds. In athletics, Uganda's World Student Games 1500 meter champion Dorcas Ajok was crowned the Nile Special Uganda Sports Press Association USPA Sports Personality of the Month for July in Lugazi, some 50 kilometers east of the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Ajok completed the 1500 meters in 4 minutes and 18.53 seconds to triumph at the World Student Games in Gwangju, South Korea, last month. In basketball, hosts Mali outplayed Equatorial Guinea 89-29 at the Africa Boys Under-16 Basketball Championships in Bamako. Ethiopia edged South Africa 70-67. Egypt beat Nigeria 107-46. Algeria dismissed Rwanda 66-44. And Tunisia outplayed Morocco 61-40. In football, former Malawian international player Ernest Mtwawali is the new head coach of the Malawi national team, the Flames. The Malawi Football Association president Walter Nyimilandu disclosed in Blantyre. Mtwawali takes over from another former Malawian player, Young Chimotsi, who was sacked after Malawi lost 2-1 at home to Zimbabwe at the start of their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign in June. Nyimilandu has tasked coach Mtwawali to get the Flames Nations Cup campaign back on track and to spearhead Malawi's progress in the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers. Finally, the Chinese capital Beijing will host the 2022 Olympic Winter Games. The International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach disclosed in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. The Chinese capital narrowly beat Almaty in Kazakhstan 44-40 when the matter was put to the vote. Beijing will be the first city to have hosted both the Summer and Winter Olympics, having staged the Summer Olympics in 2008. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Bill, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a wonderful day. Before we leave you, let's take a look one more time at some Africa-related news. U.S. President Barack Obama said Tuesday the world may have to come up with a different plan for South Sudan if the young country's feuding leaders fail to meet an August 17th deadline for a peace deal. After meeting with U.S. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, he said if the leaders miss the target, it will be necessary to move forward with a different plan and recognize that South Sudan's leaders are not capable of creating peace. Mr. Obama said South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his vice president turned rebel leader Riek Machar squandered the great hope and progress the country had when it became independent in 2011. Fighting by forces backing both men struggling for power has killed thousands and forced more than 1 million to flee their homes. It has also hurt oil production, squelching economic development. A group of African states trying to broker a peace deal has set an August 17th deadline. South Sudanese leaders could face sanctions, including an arms embargo and travel ban, if they miss that target date. That's it for this Wednesday, August 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producers Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Ricky Shryock, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm William Eagle in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very great day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll introduce you to some of the continent's best and brightest as we spotlight the 2015 Class of Mandela Washington Fellows. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as they discuss U.S. President Barack Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative. That's next time on VOA Africa. Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. voanews.com.